Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. Thank you for joining us for this week's FFP. This is the podcast that gives real football fans a real voice on the sport that we love, the biggest sport on the planet. There's no splinters in anybody's backside on this panel because there's no fence to sit on, no umming and ahhing on the FFP.
Funnily enough, as a United fan, the one player I would take before everyone else in this world right now is N'Golo Kante.
It was off the back of a Moni fan going on Twitter, because every fan now is going to go on Twitter and try to look at, you know, I've got a picture of him, he was in Derby the other day, so therefore he shouldn't do the game.
And the whole reason, even when Pardew had that worldie year, they wanted more from Pardew, right? So I don't think they know their station as much as you think they are. And I think a lot of them have the same mentality as you do. We're big. We fill our stadium. We should be where the Premiership stalwart.
My name is Jordan, your host. And you can follow us on Twitter, FFP_11. And subscribe for free. Share with your friends as well via the iTunes Library Football Fans Podcast. So let's get into my panel for the week. We are joined by the outgoing champion supporting fan, Gabriel here. How you doing, sir?
You could have just said reigning champion, current champion.
Reigning, plus you won it twice. Like, you won it once and you defended it poorly. So, outgoing champion.
Still champion.
Okay. Outgoing poorly champion. Poorly is a bit of a credit. Like, it's abysmal. The defense, you said they defended it poorly. It's been abysmal. It's been
shocking. George, you know what? I'm really questioning your selection of panel. I mean, last week it was two Tottenham fans. Now I've got two Man United fans. I just don't know what you're doing here.
You can't get the staff these days.
You can't get what I mean.
We're joined by two United fans, Akin and Marvin as well. How are we doing, gents?
Good evening, good evening.
Fresh off a 1-0 win against Villa. No?
I just... it's the funny thing is, it's factual, but I can feel that it's a shot. I know it's a shot.
I'm just saying facts. Well, I'm the host.
It's two more points than you got last weekend.
Yeah, I was about to say that. We're closer to you lot now.
They're still below us, yeah. all right, let's get into it, guys. Kick off with some drive-bys. Start off with you, Akin. There were banners week before last, and I think the weekend gone as well, for Martinez, asking him from some fans to leave. But bearing in mind, they're in a semi-final of an FA Cup. The first year he was there, they had a fantastic season. Do you think he's been slightly harshly treated? He's not been great this year, but do you think it's a little bit harsh to be saying to go?
I think that Everton have underachieved massively. After Chelsea, maybe theirs is the biggest underachievement of the season.
Thanks, Akin.
You're welcome, Gabriel. I mean, looking at the season, you've got Leicester as champions elect, Spurs are second, you know, and I feel like there was a massive opportunity given the players that they've got. They've got such a good spine. They've got Lukaku, who for me is one of the most potentially exciting strikers in Europe. You've got Ross Barkley, another player that I like. You've got John Stones, who has also been, I think he's been mismanaged by Roberto Martinez as well. So that could be part of the frustration of the fans as well, to see one of their best young players that have come through mismanaged. So you've got the makings of a very good squad there. Other players, De La Feu, there are others there as well. Very good players. And I feel that for them to be, I think they're like, they've only got 41 points or something like that. And that's terrible. So I can understand the frustration of the fans. And I don't feel that it's harsh.
Even though he's on the cusp of bringing them their first trophy since 1995. You know, we had a Tottenham fan on Ranty on the pod last week. And I asked him what he said that he feels that Martinez will be sacked regardless. And I'm thinking that Everton are not going to finish in the top three, even top four. They're not going to win the Premier League. Teams like Everton, their best chance of glory is a cup. So surely if he wins a cup, he's done better than Moyes did in 10 years.
But then I take your point that he could come away with a trophy. And me, I value trophies over Arsenal's version of a trophy, as in fourth. I value real silverware. So I understand that it is good. So if it was me, I would probably be holding my council until the end of the season, waiting to see if they delivered that trophy, and then kind of make my point or make my opinion clear as to whether I think he should be gone or not. Having said that, they have underachieved massively in the league.
Is that only because how well Leicester, Watford, West Ham have done this season?
No, or just even if they've underachieved.
Okay.
Lukaku scored, what, 20 league goals or something like that. 20 league goals, that is not easy to come by. You get, on average, two or three strike or players scoring that per season, and they've got one of them. You should be at least 7th or 8th with the squad they've got, at the very least. They've massively underachieved, so I do understand the frustration. But you've made a good point in terms of they could come away with a trophy, and that would be almost as many trophies as Arsenal have got.
All right, wow, this is this is machine gun shots out here.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, so Marvin, let's move on.
I second everything I can just say.
Marv, if you could have any of these three players next season at Old Trafford, who would you pick? Who would you take? Sanchez, Coutinho, or Eden Hazard?
It's not Hazard.
It's quite easy for me, that one, actually. I think I'd go with Sanchez. I don't want no Liverpool player at Man United. Simple as that, right?
So is Sanchez the best of the three? Forget your place for Liverpool. Is Sanchez the best of those three players?
I think the best... Well, I'm thinking about what Manchester United need, right? So, for me, as much as I like Coutinho as a player... And as much as Hazard's, you know, what can we say about Hazard this year? I mean, Hazard last year, I think he'd probably be my first choice. But I think with Sanchez, you know what you're going to get is somebody that's going to run for 90 minutes, get some goals, and be something for the opposition to have to think about when they play Manchester United. I think the biggest issue with United, well, one of the issues, there's a few, but one of the issues that I have with United, and it was evident when I watched them play against Spurs, is I think clubs like Spurs and Liverpool, they'll go, all right, lads, just play your game. You know what I mean? There isn't a lot of threats here. You know, just don't let Martial get it, maybe. And that's about it. I don't think there are that many characters that, you know, I remember, and Jude, the problem is, you know how shit we are when I keep reminiscing, right? But you remember the days when, you know, down either wing, whether it be Giggs or Beckham or Kanchelskis, there was just Lee Sharp. There were wingers for days. There was Scholesy in the middle. There was always characters that could score you goals. And I think out of the three you mentioned, Sanchez is probably going to give me the best return for goals. And above anything, that's what we need. That being said, I like them all. And I actually think somebody can rejuvenate Hazard. I think G and I have spoken about it. And there's rumours that he's pretty much been injured for a large period of the season and been asked to play through that. So I've still, unlike many, I've still got hope that, you know, with a good rest, this is still a very talented, young, really young, right, for what he's achieved, in individual. But, I mean, I would kill to have any of them at the moment, right?
It's
slim pickings. I mean, the problem is, George, you'll say to me, who's your version of those three? And whoever I mentioned, those three could run 300 meters in the space it would take that person to run 100. You know what I mean? So, you're spoiling me for choice.
Okay. Are Barca going to blow their title chances this season? It's level points, I believe, at the top there, La Liga. They're ahead on head to heads.
It's not looking good.
Three defeats in the league in a row. I think it's.
First time since a certain Dutchman was in charge.
Atkins on it today.
the thing is, they're not doing well at the moment. But you look at their team, and you said if you was to start the league now, who do you think would win the league? And I'd back Barca. So, taking out current form, because I think they can turn around the form. I think they will still do it. I think coming out of the Champions League might be a blessing in disguise for them in that sense.
I was going to say, do you think how Atletico and Real do in the Champions League will affect their home form?
Well, it depends on the Liga. Because they'll get a day off or they'll get to play the game whenever they want. You know, they'll throw it up the FA and say, hey, you know, can we play on Tuesday because we've got Champions League? You know what I mean? But, I still think without the Champions League and I still think that front three will get goals. I think in the end they'll come good. It might be tighter than it should have been looking at the beginning of the season, but I think they'll come good.
I heard some stats today that I think the front three have been rested in the last 26 games, combined minutes of 17 minutes. They've only not played 17 minutes between the three of them.
Wow.
So they've just been rinsed. They've scored 4 goals in the last, I think it's 14 games between the three of them. Before that, 30 games before, they'd scored some stupid amount. So they've clearly hit the wall.
They've hit a wall. But then again, remember, Messi at the beginning of the season wasn't playing so much.
Slow start, yeah.
So, yeah. I think they'll come good. I'd never bet against that front line.
Okay. All right. Let's move on now to I don't want to discuss too much the nominations for Player of the Year. I want to get on to the worst Player of the Year, but just very briefly, of the nominated candidates, who's your pick? Who do you think should win the Player of the Year of the listed nominees?
I mean, I've always thought, and we've talked about it, but I'm not a defender guy in this sort of category, right? I want to be excited. Mm. So you got to be doing some serious stuff to be a defender in there. So I think the nominees were pretty accurate. And I think it always comes down to where people finish at the end of the year, right? So I think if Leicester win it, I think it would make sense for Mahrez, Kante and Vardy are all nominated. I think they've all got a decent stake. I mean, for me, I've really liked Payet.
Mm.
And the reason why is just because West Ham have had a period where he's been out, right? And when that happened, they were terrible, yeah? They couldn't win a game. He comes back, free kicks for fun. Some of the best free kicks I've seen since, you know, the David Beckham days. And he plays in a really fearless way. I don't think it matters whether he's playing for France, whether he's playing for West Ham. This guy is a dead ball specialist. And most importantly, he makes players around him look good. And I think that you can never take that away. I mean, Mahrez and Vardy have been exceptional. And I think it's just my personal grudge with Vardy that I'm not going to pick him. But Payet's making, you know, people like Sacco and Moses and Noble look like they deserve to be in the Champions League. And without him, they don't. So he would be my pick. I think even Ozil, I know some people have criticised him. I mean, if you're breaking records in a season, Jordan, whether it be assists or goals, you deserve to be on that list. I just don't understand. I know people are saying, you know, he sometimes he doesn't turn up. 100%, I get that. But the guy has assists for days, right? And no one else is getting near him on that number. So there's got to be credit where it's due.
Very briefly, guys, who would be your pick, Akin?
I think I agree a lot with what Marvin just said in terms of the timing of the vote. I feel that it's a bit difficult to vote. I think, I don't know if they're still voting as early as February, March, which they used to. Hopefully they've learned about this thing that we call the World Wide Web and have learned a quicker way to do it so that we can do it close to the end of the season. But taking into account whatever Leicester have done or what will whatever they end up having achieved at the end of the season, I think it has to come from one of them. And for me, it would be Mahrez. Funnily enough, as a United fan, the one player I would take before everyone else in this world right now is N'Golo Kante. He's a real central midfielder. That is what a centre midfielder is supposed to be doing. He does everything and he doesn't even get tired. So that's the one player I would take. But
someone mentioned, sorry to cut you, there was a game Leicester was on TV. It wasn't the West Ham game, it was the last week. And the commentator made a comment that he did some long run from his defence to the opposition's box. And the commentator said something like, oh yeah, he's just run 60 yards, he's sprinting, he's not even blowing. And you looked at him, and he wasn't even huffing and puffing. He looks like even having sprinted 60 yards, he doesn't look tired.
Yeah. But the thing, more than that, he's got quality.
Yeah.
He's got quality. He's got good technique. He can pick out a pass. He can tackle well. He intercepts well. He reads the game well. So for me, as a player, he's the one player I would take above everyone else this summer. But I think, again, back to what Marvin said, I'm an attacking type of guy. To create is a lot more difficult and magical than to destroy. Anybody can destroy within a second. Nearly anyone can defend. I know it takes a lot of understanding the game, but there's a certain level of kind of divine intervention that's needed when it comes to being a special attacking player. And what Mahrez has done throughout the season, I think he has to take it more than Payet.
Akin, just one question from me, right?
Oh, here we go.
I 100% agree. This guy is serious, but you're telling me If I say, if Ed Woodward said to you, Akin, here's your check, write it, go out there, whoever, get whoever you want. I'm talking Ronaldo, Messi.
On the list, you meant? Or did you mean in the league?
He's my number one transfer.
Oh wow, okay.
Target. And the reason why I'd say
I know what you're saying, but I'm saying Akin, really.
There's a few reasons. Yeah.
He's, I thought you were gonna say there's a few exceptions. You're gonna give me reasons.
I'm giving you reasons. His release clause is 20 million. He plays for a small club. No offense to Leicester. You might win the league. Right. Be happy with that. Right, so right. It shouldn't take a long time
to
do.
So you're saying out of the people that are gettable, he would be your number one?
He would be number one because of
what he can deliver
and for how easy, so to speak, the transfer should be.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't get centre midfielders being centre midfielders anymore.
Yeah, no, you're right.
He can do that.
Mm.
Put him alongside Herrera.
Problem. Cool.
Put Herrera alongside someone, you know what
I mean? Yeah. Just put him on the pitch, I guess, yeah.
Gabriel, who's your pick?
Yeah, it's going to be real quick because Akin has kind of stole my thunder. But it's different at the same time. I'm going to go for Kante. Mm. And the reason why I'm going to go for Kante, I know what these guys are saying about the attacking players, but I think Kante has had for a defensive midfielder, I think he's had a 9/10 out of 10 season. I think he's had a season for what he's... It's difficult, and people are going to laugh, but it's comparable to what maybe, in his position, what Ronaldo achieved maybe when he won Player of the Year in terms of how he's performed. Now, obviously...
I agree.
Yeah. Now, it's difficult. It's going to be difficult to judge it because, you know, he's not scoring eye-catching goals or he's not... He's actually taken on players. So I can't say he's not taken on players, but and his performance level has been consistent since day one, whereas I think Vardy, Mahrez, and even Kane have all kind of had their dips for the season. Where I've never watched Leicester and felt that Kante hasn't given them that bit of an edge. So I'd go to Kante, followed by Vardy, and maybe Harry Kane.
I agree. Actually, my pick was Mahrez, but I changed my mind to Kante because I think he's just a glue as well. Yeah. I think without Kante, they don't win the league.
Yeah.
I think the others they could. Put a push for top four, take Kante out of that team, they're finishing top 10 at best.
Yeah. But can you not guarantee, right, that next year we're going to be sitting here in April saying another sterling year from Kante? Can you honestly say
I don't
that?
See why not, because I think that the points that Akin made are valid. He's technically, you don't lose your technique within a year. He's technically gifted. He's clearly got an engine. You don't lose that within a year.
Yeah.
He makes good decisions. I don't see him giving the ball away very often.
I mean, I'm
the levels are above at United would be different. I accept
that.
I guess I'm just playing devil's advocate here, right? Because I agree, he's fantastic. And like, I know for a fact in that role, there's no one at United that comes close to the performance. But I guess I'm just a bit of a pessimist when it comes to this, right? This Leicester bandwagon rocked and rolled. It's taken everyone by storm. They haven't had any European distractions. Ranieri, I mean, bear in mind where they were. I'm just not at the place where I can say there's a guarantee that come next season, Leicester are going to be there or thereabouts. And Kante is part of that, right? He has surpassed all expectations, as has a lot of the players that are on the list. But I'll be interested to see how it plays out.
You're worried if he might have peaked. This is as good as it might have got.
I'm just thinking right now for Leicester, this is a Disney movie, right?
Mm.
This is magic, right? Mm. This is the sort of things dreams are made of. These Leicester fans, I think, are very... I think they're realistic. It's not just that they want to win the league. They know that they may never get an opportunity like this again. This is for the taking. And I just feel that there is totally the possibility that they'll think, flipping hell, we've done this. This is magic. I don't know if the mentality is going
to
be there next season.
Let's do it again.
Let's prove them wrong. Or, man, when I get home, I'm still going to look at that Premiership medal that I won last season. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, sorry, Jill. I hear your point, but... I disagree with Akin that, you know, he would be top of my list. I'm just not somebody that buys on one season.
No, that's where I hear where you're coming from, Marvin. And I'm being a bit of a hypocrite when it comes to Kante. Because usually I'm the first to say it's only been one season. Judge him on his next season. Can he do it again? And so on and so forth. But I don't know. There's something about him that just convinces me.
Yeah. He'd be nice to have him. You know what
he convinces me
what
Mahrez does.
You know, I think what you're getting is you're getting the energy, you're getting the fitness, but you won't get any, like, Instagram. Instagram nonsense or social media ridiculous. You'll have a professional that can do the business. Mm. And sometimes you need that. And plus, what you want and what we don't have enough of, I think you made the point, is there's just not enough players in the world anymore that do their job,
do your job
well.
Do your
you know
job.
I mean? Yeah.
Don't
and
do half of
and
it.
And consistently as
and
well.
Consistently. Yeah. Do you know
and
what
don't
mean?
Take a selfie. And don't
you won't, I'm hopeful. Yeah. I mean, I might jinx
lapse
it
of
now,
honor.
You won't hear him or his agent this summer going, well, you know, if United came knocking, you know what I mean? If United knocked, he might come.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I think he's one of those people that are just a professional on how it should be played. You know what I mean? Yeah. Those could be famous last words because.
And also, the Euros could play a part. If he does well at the Euros,
yeah,
he could attract Europe's best clubs. He might get on
I
the
think
radar.
He already is. I saw stories in the last week about his release clause being 20 million. Mm. Mm. Everyone's looking. So I think it's his only season at Leicester.
I think he's making a move. I think Vardy, there's something about Vardy, I think he'll be in the next year.
Yeah, he'll stay. Mahrez will probably go.
I think Mahrez is a particular one that I think he's not that young, right? He's been around, and I just think if the offer's right, he might think I've done a lot here, and it's time to get that big move. Mm. You know what I mean?
It's the closest player that I can think of, like in terms of a kind of an all rounder currently playing to Kante, is Modric.
Yeah,
is he probably the closest in Europe that can win a ball, can spray a ball, long ball, short ball, can get you a goal, can get box to box.
Rakitic,
you reckon?
But he's in that conversation, which is credit to you.
And let's be honest, like, you talked about him maybe dropping the level next year. I think he could drop
and
two or three levels.
I'd still be good enough to improve Army's.
I just think it's ridiculous to use our team as a benchmark.
All right, you can use ours then.
Who ain't going to improve that shit?
Gabriel, right, let's go on to who's been the worst player this season? Who's been the biggest disappointment this season?
Oh, man.
Is it disappointment of player? I need to be very clear on this.
Good question.
Any great areas.
And why have you brought up this topic? Is there
because
a reason?
I just think that, because I think that it's more interesting than who's been the best player. I think we're going to probably all agree on the two or three.
Okay.
Whereas I think worst
I just feel like this is a bit premeditated.
No,
it's a bit leading. It's a bit leading.
Let's
start with Gabriel. Who would be your pick?
Oh, man. Well, you know what? I'm not going to sit here and start popping shots out. I'm going to look at home first. I tell you who's been bad. And I can give you about four or five. So I'm saying Branislav.
Give me a couple.
I'll give you Branislav Ivanovic because he's been. Although he's kind of. It's got quieter around him because he's played centre back and I guess his mistakes are less obvious. He's still been very poor this season.
He was my pick, actually.
Thibaut Courtois. The only reason why I wouldn't put him as number one is because he was injured the part of the season, which has kind of saved some of him. But I look at him and I look at every goal we concede, and one in every two goals, I'm thinking,
I think you
could have done more.
Touch harsh on Courtois this year, personally. He's had a poor season,
yeah.
But I think he's not as bad as you made him out to be.
No. I think he's been masked by the fact of how poor the rest of the team has been. Yeah. And then I guess my last one within our team would be I can't even say that's the last one. Well, Eden Hazard, as Marv's mentioned, for the reasons Marv mentioned before, and Cesc Fabregas has been shocking as well.
Pick one.
So, worst out of all of them?
We're going to put it to a Twitter poll on from the Football Fans Podcast Twitter handle, and we're going to try and get the listeners to pick their best one based on our nominations.
Let's go Hazard.
Hazard.
You can't just score one. Yeah. One goal. That's crazy.
It's poor.
It's poor. He's been terrible.
Akin?
Yeah, I agree with Gabriel.
for once.
Yeah, Eden Hazard. For me, again, he brought a bit of stardust to this league last season. He looked arrogant as he played as well. I love that. You know, he did the business. And this season, I cannot believe the drop. It's ridiculous. It's shameful and it's a disgrace how the whole club has performed this season anyway, and a lot of their players. It's disgusting to even fathom. I feel sorry for Gabriel, but I don't at the same time because of how smug he was last season. But Hazard, for me, takes that. Yeah.
Marv, worst player of the season.
I just want to say, under no circumstances do I feel sorry for Gabriel. I'm loving it.
Are you going to put the pie in there, Marv?
No. But the thing is, right, so it's funny, because I thought to myself, oh, this is going to be the pie bashing. I thought this is where...
I know you think I think Hazard's been worse than the poo.
I started doing some research. Like, I looked at Opta stats and thought... And the first
the
thing
pie's notched, hasn't he?
Well, the thing
some
is,
guys
yeah,
haven't.
And the funny thing is, as soon as I Googled it, like the first link I clicked on, just a picture of the pie. You know what I mean? The first thing. Then I went to the second thing. The pie. So I'm not going to say the pie, but he's obviously in the conversation because there was a lot of hype around him when he came. For me, I hear what Gabe's saying about Hazard, but I always think, if you're thinking about biggest disappointment, then I think the conversation is Hazard and Depay and people that came with big price tags. But when I look at all round, I was thinking, well, I'm going to start with the crappiest club, right? So I'm going to look at Aston Villa. And I just think, what's going on with Julian Lescott, right? Bearing in mind, you know, the fact he was at City, he went for big money for everything, like 27 mil or something like that. He's been appalling on the pitch. I think he's been their worst defender. The stuff with the tweets and all, like the whole thing has annoyed me. I also think Demichelis at Man City has been appalling. I think, you know, Rashford got a lot of props. And I'm thinking, and Lescott is in the mix because of just everything that surrounds him. The way he's conducted himself as a person as well as a player. Demichelis just purely as a player. Like, I know for a fact that Premiership teams see Demichelis and rub their hands together, right? And Rashford got a lot of props, but it was Demichelis, right? And he is an old man doing a young man's job.
Exactly. So is that his fault, though?
Well, yeah, he's the player. You know what I mean?
But to be fair, 3 years ago he was 3 years younger, and he wasn't even wasn't much better then.
You know what? You can retire at any time. You know what I mean? It's not. It's you know what? Like Gary Neville got found out against West Brom, and he said he sat on the bench, took out his shin pads. And he was like...
But Gary Neville knew he had a career afterwards.
Yeah, I know.
He's earning footballer money, or he was, as a so-called expert or a football pundit.
I don't know.
If I'm Demichelis and City are going to pay me 60-70 grand, I'm playing till I'm 40. If they're going to give me contracts...
Yeah, but you can play... I'm not saying you can't play until you're 40, but I'm saying if you're shit, you're shit. Yeah. So you can play until you're 40. If you're going to play poorly, then you're... in the conversation.
Marv, I mean, you know, you made a good point, and you have done something that we failed to do, which was look at the less obvious ones, which is really good. But can you say that Hazard has played better than Demichelis?
Gee, the thing about it is, right, I've watched every City game I've played with Demichelis, he's been in trouble. There's been no game that I've seen him where people have been, this is why you've got experience at the back. That conversation has not happened, right?
So and the thing,
Hazard's been the same.
The thing about Demichelis is when it's almost like any substitute, there's never been a substitution where he's come off. And it's not every day like a centre back gets taken off at like 60, 70 minutes. It's because Pellegrini's looking at him and he is getting roasted. He is getting roasted. Like, even when John Terry's had a bad performance, and I get what you're saying, right? But I'm going to show a little compassion for your boy and say, you know what, if he has been carrying an injury this whole time, and the thing is, Chelsea have been appalling. Hazard has been appalling, right? But there are still people at City who are shining. Chelsea are overall, I mean, you've just gone through your list. They were all Chelsea players. Chelsea have just played poorly as a team. Hazard is carrying a lot of that just because of how great he was last season. If he's carrying an injury as well, I think... You know what? Let me give the guy a bit of slack. Same for Depay. He came with this big thing. I mean, I was looking at the ages. There's people like Joe Riley at United who are older than Depay. Depay is a young man. Demichelis, as Jordan said, right? Whether it's long hair, short hair, whatever. I've just thought, City don't know what you're doing. You've got all this cash. Yet still, you're having to play this guy. I think he's got to be in the thing. And then Julian Lescott, I mean, the stuff with Collie Moore.
We're going to get to that later on, so hold that
down. The trim.
All right, let's move on, guys. let's get on now to the relegation battle now. Start with you, Akin. Who do you want to go down? So it's clearly looking like two from three, maybe four push. Who do you want to see go?
I was delighted that Villa went, firstly, because I've wanted them to go for a few years. They've been, they're terrible. And they've been terrible since Paul Lambert was in charge. They've been really poor.
He kept them in the league, though.
I'm not saying, yeah, he did well. I never said anything about him as a manager.
Yeah,
that team have just been terrible for a few years. So I'm delighted to see them gone. Newcastle, I don't really like that club. Don't really like the fans. They have a full sense of kind of, why do you think you should be in any trophy mix? In why? What has given them this belief? Just because, fair enough, they get 50,000 every week. They're a one city club though, so you should be pulling in that much, you know? But I don't know, I really don't understand where this comes from, that they're so massive and that they should be in the trophy mix and they should be in Europe and this, that and the other. They ran, what's his name, out of town, Alan Pardew. For me, he's a decent manager. You know, people say, oh, the Alan Pardew slump. What manager doesn't have slumps?
His slumps are pretty...
No, every manager...
No, his slumps are... Wenger, even Van Gaal, they don't go on seven-game, eight-game runs.
Don't mention the Dutch person. Don't mention him. But Wenger's at a club that's of a higher calibre. Alan Pardew's never been there, so his slump isn't... And I would argue that Wenger's slumps have been as bad.
Eight games in a row, just defeats.
But just... I would say for the level that they're at, their slumps have been poor. 10 years without a trophy. That is some slump in any case.
Okay, but in terms of
form on games, a short-term basis,
I don't know any manager that can go on
yes,
nine,
but
10
managers don't get enough time at a club anymore to come out of those slumps. If you found that they did, every manager would have a slump like that. 3, 4, 5 games, 6 games without a win or losing. They'd come back, have a good run. That's what it was like 15, 20 years ago when managers got more time.
Right.
So they ran him out of town and almost they look like they're going to get relegated. So I want them to go, but somehow I think they might rescue it somehow. I don't want them to, but I feel they might. And I'm impartial about the rest.
Okay, it's much for much.
I like Norwich. I like their manager. Who else is down there?
Sunderland.
Palace, I like Palace. Sunderland, I don't mind them going, but... I like Jermaine Defoe and let's say Sunderland because I don't really like Allardyce.
Okay, Sunderland,
you know.
Newcastle.
Let's go there, mate.
G, who's been more poorly run out of Villa and Newcastle, do you think, as a club?
Oh, man. Joe, that is a good one. man, I got to go with Villa because if you look at, you got to look at their predicament. Like, they are, you know, they've been down. I think people probably known that they're going down since the first couple of weeks of the season.
Newcastle have spent 4 times the amount though in the last year, sorry, 2 years that Aston Villa have spent, and they could still go down.
Yeah, yeah, that, you know, you make a good point, but at least Mike actually tried. You know, I think he's got it horribly wrong this year, but he did. You know, at the end of the season, he made a big speech about the horse and the cart and all that type of stuff, and how he was going to go for it. He was going to go for Champions League. And he stuck to his word. He spent the money. He just gave it to the wrong people, obviously. So, I don't know. I mean, Newcastle, in terms of their business model, they seem relatively sustainable. And if they do stay up, you'd say they'd stay up. And they've got Rafa Benitez as well, who is Akin. Does it agree with me? Well, let's call him. Can I call him a C-list manager? B C-list manager, Akin.
Call him what you want.
Because I said he was the lead manager there, and Akin wasn't happy with that. So, he's a top class manager. He's a manager above.
Yeah. He's not a top class manager.
See, there you go. You just said call him what I want.
I love the fact G asked for permission, though. He's seriously broken, isn't it? See, a year ago, he never asked. He'd have just said, this is what I think. But now he's like, can I see this?
I knew whatever I said about it was going to come with a retort. So I just thought, But yeah, so because I think... And you know what? I totally disagree with. And I saw Marv was there nodding his head when Naki was talking about Newcastle. Like, Newcastle for me is a great club. Like,
very briefly, why? I want to get on to Marv and who's choice stuff. But very briefly, why? I don't the 50,000 thing.
Small club syndrome.
Doesn't wash with me. They're a
well-supported
club.
Chelsea can't get 50,000. I understand
I do get
why Gabriel would say it.
Okay, so Gabriel, you tell us why you think they're a big club.
Because I've been there a few times, and when you go there, you do get that feel. Like you go from around
Leeds. I'm sorry, if I went to Leeds, they've got that big club feel as well.
Have you been to Leeds?
I haven't, but the fact is that people tell me when they go to Leeds, it's a real football club. There's history there. The fans, the whole
and
city,
Leeds,
the whole
Leeds
city
Leeds
loves
do have
it.
A history.
No.
They were once good.
No, I don't get me wrong. I'm not discounting Leeds, but when I say when you go to St James's Park, you do get the feeling that you're at one of the biggest grounds. It's just
because the fans around you kind of perpetuate that feeling. They tell themselves they're a big club, so when you go there, you feel it.
No, not necessarily. It's memories from things like Sky Sports and the 4-3 against Liverpool, things like that. Like
clutch in their game, come on. A couple of exciting games.
They got zero
a big club
for that game.
Great game. They're also famous for I'd Love It.
They're famous for I Love It, Kevin Keegan.
They surrendered a 12-point lead.
Great Premier League moments. That doesn't mean they're a big club, surely.
When it comes down to it, you're saying they're a big club. There are big clubs in the Championship. Nottingham Forest are in the
they're
Championship.
They're well supported.
Leeds are in the Championship.
I don't dispute that. What I'm saying is, I've never met any Geordie that thinks that they're entitled to win a trophy. The Geordies that, whenever I speak to them, they just want to see good football. They want to see players that try. I never hear them saying, we should win the league or we should come in top four. And I think they're really nice people as well. Not
Marvin, go
ahead. Before I answer this, I've been to Birmingham. They're not nice people, so good luck, Aston Villa.
I'm very big on teams in the Premier League contributing. Yeah. So if you're going to be in this Premier League, you've got to bring something. You're not going to win trophies. That's fine. We can't all win trophies. Play some good football. Bring through some good players. Bring something to the Premier League. I don't see what Sunderland, Newcastle, and even Norwich, although this is their first year back, so I give them a bligh, what they contribute to the Premier League. Who do you want to just get rid of? Who do you think just is not adding to the league?
Arsenal.
Ooh. Yeah.
First
choice would be Liverpool, obviously. To be honest, Jordan, for me, it's really easy. I take points from the panel, right? But it's Norwich and it's Newcastle I'd want to go down.
Why?
It's easy for me. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, no one would miss Norwich. Norwich have no... There is no... I don't think Norwich have any players that people are going to be scrambling for. I mean, you know, they've put their hopes on Cameron Jerome for some time. And that's of all of Manchester United, even the packing out by Liverpool. That defeat by Norwich at home burns me. So Norwich, I'd want gone. I just don't think there's enough stars there. I think their manager, fair enough, he's very young. He's done a very good job.
It's their first year. Newcastle and Sunderland, every year contribute nothing.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but no one will miss Norwich. No one. I don't even think Norwich will miss Norwich, right? Listen, they're not filling their ground, right? I think most of them would rather have a cup of tea than go. Like they're not the club for the Prem.
Marv really doesn't like rural areas or something. You know?
Have you ever tried to get there?
It's not even an M road,
bruv. It's always Norwich people don't want to leave and people want to go there. You know what I mean? I think Arsenal flew in, didn't they? It's inconvenient for everyone. You know what I mean? And then for me, you know what? I hear what you're saying. Like, there's always going to be crap teams, right? Mm. But what I love is I love a team that's going to give me a bit of fight. And I think out of the three we're talking about, Sunderland are the ones that are trying, right? I know Newcastle picked up a win, but I mean, Newcastle got packed out at home by Bournemouth at home, didn't they, the other day?
Yeah.
And I take G's point about Rafa. Rafa, you know, who cares about Rafa? Rafa, if Newcastle go down, Rafa's gone. I'm sure it's in his contract. There's not a love affair there. And you know, you're saying Ashley had. You talked about how nice the people are,
and then you
caveated it with Ashley's had a good go. Ask those nice people what they think about Ashley, and tell me if you've still got the same connection. Do you know what I mean? So for me, Newcastle. I mean, some of the stuff. I mean, I'm thinking of back in the day, G, when they had like Dennis Wise running their transfers.
They thought
they were on a winning thing when they, you know, when they tapped into this unknown country called France and got any player they could get their hands on. Plus the fact you're saying you ask a Geordie fan, you know, should they be winning the league? They're not saying it now, G. But when
ago,
they ran United close with Keegan, they were saying it. And the whole reason, even when Pardew had that worldy year, they wanted more from Pardew, right?
They still weren't happy with
it. So I don't think they know their station as much as you think they are. And I think a lot of them have the same mentality as you do. We're big. We fill our stadium. We should be. We're the Premiership stalwarts. And I just think the Premiership is in a. We're in a new era, right? Nothing is on a silver plate. There would never have been a time when a Chelsea could win a Prem and then be nowhere the year after. They'd probably get in the top five. Chelsea are nowhere. The Prem does, it gives you no favours, and I think Newcastle are where they should be based on performances, and it's as simple as that. And as a result, people like Defoe have come in. I think what's that youngster, the redhead?
Watmore.
He's not great, but at least we're seeing some green shoots of a bit of youth, and I think Sam's
he
a good
go back to school.
Sam's a good example of the fact that, you know, the Premiership constantly turns to this foreign night. But like, that's why no one cares about Villa. Like, they had the chance to get someone in. They tried to be extravagant, Remy Gard. It didn't work out. Whereas Sunderland thought, backs against the wall, who can give us what we need? And Sam showing them a bit of fight.
Okay, all right, let's move on to the next ones. There's a lot more I want to get through on this pod. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, FFP _11, and share with your friends. Next topic. Start with you, Gabriel, on this one. Let's talk Simeone and Arsenal. And I want to ask you, do you think Arsenal not going for someone like Diego Simeone is a clear sign that they are scared of change?
I think it's more not sacking Wenger than is going for Simeone. I don't see a link between Simeone and Arsenal, really. I know, you know...
No, there isn't. I'm just saying, if you're going to get rid of Wenger, with Pep going to City, Jose going to United, Klopp at Liverpool, Pochettino at Tottenham, Conte, I'm not sure about, but he'll make you better. He might not reach where you want to get to, but he'll make you better.
Yeah.
Even teams like West Ham, Watford, Leicester have got good, solid managers. Next year, if we stick with Wenger, we as an Arsenal fan, everyone knows, we'll get left behind.
Yeah.
So do they need to bite the bullet and have a change of attitude and culture and just go for this guy that clearly is a hot prospect?
Well, he's
more than a hot prospect. He's won stuff.
Yeah. I honestly don't think Simeone will come. But yeah, I do see what you're saying about fear of change. It's always difficult with Wenger because it's hard to judge. Well, you can judge the last 10 years and say they've been absolute failure, as has been said on many occasions. But at the same time, he's more and more kind of letting the seeds out now that he was kind of shackled in the transfer market. But I kind of feel like he hasn't been for the last 2-3 seasons, I think it's fair to say. He's decided when and when not to spend the money. His own frugal expenditure policy is a part of his mentality as well. It isn't just the club there. And he has too much control at a club for one. But it's crazy the amount of control. It's from what I hear anyway. Obviously, you never know exactly what's going on. But I remember Arsenal have traditionally been shocking at the back. I remember Steve Bould coming off the touchline a few times when he was first appointed, having people in the media made the point, oh, you haven't conceded any goals, is it because of Steve Bould? He's like, no, nothing's changed. And then Steve Bould is kind of now, he's kind of banned from coming to the it's just too much control. I think Arsenal do need to break away from him. They do need to start afresh, I feel. But then at the same time, maybe I wouldn't be as critical as some of the Arsenal fans are being, given the caveat that I think he probably was handcuffed through some of the period of his failure.
Akin, people always say to me that, oh, Simeone wouldn't go to Arsenal. Why would he go to Arsenal? Simeone's on a contract where he's getting paid, I think, $4.5 million a year at Atletico Madrid. Arsenal pay Wenger $8 million a year. Simeone could get that at least. So he's doubling his salary already. He's going to a club with a stadium that's there, reasonably brand new. He's got players there that he doesn't need to necessarily get rid of. He's just bringing two or three. He's got a group. He's in one of the greatest cities in the world. He's in the Premier League. If you make him an offer that he can't refuse, would you, if you were the owners at Arsenal, just go out by any means necessary and get this guy before someone else does and you're stuck with no one?
Who's going to make this offer to Simeone? Arsene Wenger's hired his own board. How can you hire your boss? It's true what Gabriel said. He's got absolute all the power at Arsenal. He's going to go when he wants to go. The people he hired, his bosses, they are not brave enough to sack. They shouldn't even, they don't even, f- for what he's given, the time he's given, they shouldn't sack him per se. It should be changing his role a bit. There should be a conversation that's had. But he should by no means go on past this season. But we all know he will. We all know he will. He has too much power at Arsenal. He's going nowhere. Now, onto the point in terms of you kind of sold Arsenal a bit more than you should have. There's changes that need to be made in that squad. I don't subscribe to this. They've got like the second or third best squad in the league.
So that squad is quite good. With that same squad with Simeone in charge,
he could do better than what Wenger has done. But Wenger is no longer, for me, a very good manager. He once was, but as what happens with older people, you get stuck in your ways. And the difference between the last old guy that was around, Sir Alex Ferguson, he used to keep around him young people. He used to refresh his backrooms team a lot. He used to listen to his assistant. he also had less power than Wenger does in terms of the whole running of the football club because he was better at delegating. He understood that he shouldn't be doing everything all by himself. Wenger is, from what I understand, a very, very stubborn character. It took him how long to hire a defensive coach anyway in Steve Bould, and it seems like he's no longer listening to him anyway because there are no changes. It took him, 20-something years in management to line up defensively against, Man City last season. Yeah. This is how stubborn this man is. He is going nowhere. So why we're even talking about Simeone is beyond me.
Well, the reason why I bring him up is because Arsenal are a big club, despite what you may think. They are a big club. The top managers are getting eaten up week by week. Wenger's got 1 year left in his contract. Now, if we assume that he doesn't extend that contract, do Arsenal not need to move now? Pounce now.
Arsenal needed to move in 2010 and 2011, around that time. That's when they needed to make a change. We're now in 2016. He's got closer, let's say, to the league in terms of his league position. The league, in terms of quality, has gone down, but he still can't win it. But this isn't sending the right the messages to the board. All they see is the balance sheets. Kroenke is now rich enough to buy half of America. He bought how many? I can't believe the amount of land he bought in America is bigger than the state of Los Angeles or something like that, or Los Angeles County. That's how much land their owner owns. You know, Arsene Wenger writes his own check in terms of his wages. And I think he's got shares in Arsenal as well. I'm not sure. So he's going nowhere. It's not happening. I feel for you, Jordan, because you're trying to kind of... I have compassion. The guys here are looking at me like, why the hell do you feel for Jordan? And I get where you're coming from.
But Gabe earlier, man.
I don't want sympathy. That's what your honest views.
But you're trying to kind of manufacture a dream that it could possibly
that's
happen.
That's what I've got, Akin.
He's got... Yeah, I know. I get you. I feel for you. But he's going nowhere. September, he's going to be here saying the same thing. There wasn't any value in the transfer market. Mm. You would have bought one player maybe, because now you're doing that. You're spending 30, 40 million. Ooh, big deal on a player, you know.
Yeah.
So, and he's going to say there's no value, blah, blah, blah. You stupid fans are going to get excited when you go through about 6-7 games winning. You're going to be like, oh, we've got a chance to win the league, as you did in January. You're going
to
say, oh, Wenger in. Oh, we've got a chance.
It was 2 games, to be fair.
Anyway, you said it. And I think it was longer than that. So you're going to come around saying, yeah, we've got a chance, yeah. You're going to have one big performance against a decent team in Europe. Oh, yeah, we can win the Champions, we can do it. And then this time next year, you're going to be talking the same nonsense after Arsene Wenger's extended his contract. So
okay, I take your point. I hear what you're saying. Marvin, do you feel that there is a comfort, a level of comfort at Arsenal with Arsene Wenger, and a fear that when this guy goes, we're going to get relegated? And someone like Simeone, who's the antithesis to someone like Wenger, the board just don't want that because the comfort levels are so high. It's a risk they don't want to take, even though the guy's a proven winner.
I think Akin nailed it, Jordan. I mean, no disrespect to Arsenal fans and all this stuff, but big club.
Come on. Arsenal are a big club. We're not United. We're not Real Madrid. We're
keep
not in that bracket. Arsenal are a big club.
Where are you?
There's only about 5 clubs in that group.
Okay,
so come on.
Being half. But what I'm trying to say is,
not Tottenham.
For me, it's it's not.
And I hate Tottenham.
Wow.
But for me, I think
I tried to get Arsenal fan to speak on the panel as well, and I couldn't.
I think Akin nailed it, right? The board is Arsene Wenger, right? He picked it. So are the board scared? No. The board just want to keep their job. Arsene Wenger wants to, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's like saying, Marv, are you scared to sack yourself? No, it's not about fear. I just want to keep my job. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I think he's running it. I think, you know, and I'll be honest, Jude, I'm always honest with you. Anybody that's not an Arsenal fan wants Arsene Wenger to stay at the club, right?
It was hilarious.
Last night at Stoke game, the Tottenham fans.
It's hilarious to watch.
It's a double-edged sword, right? Because, and I'm an advocate of saying the grass isn't always greener. We've seen time and time again where people have had a good season, underachieved, and then bosses have pulled the trigger, and then they've disappeared without a trace, right? So that obviously, if you get rid of Wenger, there's a possibility. But the truth of the matter is, I think people know that Arsenal do have the youth, they do have the stadium, they do have the infrastructure to be a real potent force. But Arsene Wenger is the ceiling, right? And he will give you consistency, but he'll give you as Jose said, you know, consistent failure. You're a specialist in failure. But that being said, I mean, I do not want to get away from the fact that the beginning of the season, when Arsenal were rocking and rolling, there was a lot of Arsenal fans, you being one of them, George, who were chatting a lot of shit.
What did I say?
You said you could win the league.
We could win the league.
You said you were going to.
No, I didn't. No, I did. I said we could win the league.
You said you were going to.
I said we could win the league.
George, you know what?
We've never said we're going to win the league.
You said you're going to win the league.
I don't want to get into an argument. But the thing is, right, people, the funny thing is, I'm not a fickle person, right? So, and I probably should be more. So if I like a player, even when the chips are really down, I'll try and stick with them. I really have to eat some humble pie and turn my back. I remember we were on a pod. You said something like, you know what? If Arsenal beat City, you'll get behind Wenger. Yeah. They beat City.
Two games later, we drew Liverpool.
That's not what you said, Jude.
No, I said if we beat City, I will back Wenger.
I just think Wenger is a lightning rod for Arsenal, right?
So are you still backing Wenger?
No. Two games later, I saw that I was deluded.
I could just wear that record. But yeah, I think he's the lightning rod. I think there is a lot that Arsenal need to do aside from that. And everybody's talking about Wenger. I think there's defensive frailties in that back line. I don't think any of those four who you play are worldies. Mm. And I think, obviously, you could say, well, Wenger's got to make those changes. But I just think, I think Wenger's taken a lot of the heat.
So you can't answer my next question,
no,
Mark.
It's
so
beyond, I think it's beyond transfers.
But I'm
not sure if it is, though, because take our current back four. The point I make, if Simeone is in charge of that back four, are they as bad as they are right now?
No.
So then the problem it's not about bringing in players then.
That's my point. It's beyond transfers.
No, but he's right, because I guess one of the things that I always think about is, and it's the same for United in a way, but one of the things that Arsenal have always had a problem with, ever since, like, it's probably Gilberto Silva, when we're talking DMs that put a foot on the ball or the man, whatever comes first. And Wenger was under pressure, didn't that? And then when it came to when they said Eleni or whatever his name is, he's all right, but he's a 5 million. I'm trying to, you know, go back to my glory days of, you know, how I plucked Vieira and Petit out and stuff like that. So I think there is an arrogance there, but the question you asked, that are Arsenal scared to go for Simeone? The answer is no. The sooner Arsenal fans get to the point of the fact that Arsenal is Arsene Wenger and he'll go when he's ready, the better for everyone.
But just to add, I think Arsene Wenger's failings cannot be blamed on being shackled in the transfer market. It's beyond that. His tactical decisions before games, during games, his team selections, he hasn't got it. Mm. He has not. He's no longer
he's
got
it. Quick one, Gabriel. Do you feel that if he doesn't win the Premier League next season or the Champions League next season?
Why is that if?
Did you say if he doesn't win the Champions League?
Just go with me.
Can I
ask my question, please? If he doesn't win the Premier League or the Champions League next season.
You're going to date Beyonce tomorrow.
Do you feel, and he goes, do you feel his memory over the 20 years at Arsenal will be seriously stained?
I think it's stained already. So I think it's
It's the league next year and he goes out of a Premier League or a Champions League. It can't be tarnished, can it?
George, come on.
Okay, come on. Okay, the likelihood is slim, but if I said to you, Leicester win the Premier League last year.
Winning the Champions League.
I'm going to help.
He's
I'm
not winning
help, I'm going to help. Before you answer Jordan's
just pretend, yeah?
Yeah.
Just
forget
pretend.
About life. start with that. Forget about
let's
life.
Let's just pretend.
Gabriel. And then answer the question.
You're the sensible one in here, so I'm asking you the question.
So if I jumped into imagination land for 5 minutes.
Whatever you got to do.
Now, you know what? I think Arsenal fans will be so elated that they won the league that they might forget about the last 10, 12, 15 years, whatever it is, and then just say, thank you, Wenger, but please go now.
But if he doesn't, what I'm trying to get at is in 20 years, 30 years from now, will people look at, when they think of Arsenal Wenger at Arsenal, will they think of the last 12 years or the first 9
seven.
Years?
I think overall, it's
the 7 years.
It was nine. Give it nine.
I think overall, if people are going to be sensible, they will look at it and think what Wenger's done for the club. Wenger has revolutionised the club. But I think people, you always learn in football or just in life generally about what you've done most recently. And what he's done in the last 10, 12 years has been shocking. Mm. So he probably won't get the props that he deserves overall.
Sorry, I don't, again, this Arsene Wenger myth. All the things that he revolutionised, changing their diets and bringing in different things. And bringing in the brand of football.
Did you see us play before Wenger?
Football was going that way in any case.
We'll never know that, will we?
We do know that.
We'll never know that.
It was going that way.
We know that
he kicked it off. He brought off in the Prem.
He has failed. And I'll tell you what. Because he got stuck in a term. Remember, he had the benefit of having the inside knowledge of France already because he's French and his networks were French and all that kind of stuff. So he knew about Vieira, Petit, and those were the only two that he signed, I think, and Overmars in his first season or so. Oh, well, yeah. But important players that, you know, were serious. Okay. But then the rest of the team was George Graham's. Yeah. So, and then Bruce Rioch is the one that signed Dennis Bergkamp. So you could say their best team, for me, which is the 98 team, their best team was, it's that whole thing with Roberto Martinez. His first season at Everton, he benefited from the organisation that David Moyes had and added a bit of sprinkle, stardust and all that kind of stuff. But going back to Wenger, he did that in Arsenal's first incarnation. And I think that has been kind of blown a bit out of, they were playing fantastic football. It was beautiful to watch. But when the chips came down to it, a certain other team stepped their level up. And he couldn't respond. He responded now and again, but he couldn't respond to the level that they probably should have.
Maintained it over
and
period.
He's never retained the league title. Yeah. That says a lot for me.
So just
he's
in one
never
word,
won in Europe.
So in one word, if next year
you qualify for the Champions League 20 years and celebrate that rubbish.
Okay.
You've never won it.
The fans enough. All right.
But it's his fault. That's just not Wenger's fault that they celebrate fourth.
He called it a trophy. But said finishing top four is a trophy.
Yeah, but
those are Wenger's words.
Those are his words, but they're the idiots that are believing it.
Hang on.
You know what I mean?
He's the idiot that said it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
but
you know,
in a word.
A lot of idiots.
I want to move on, but in a word, same question of Gabriel. If he doesn't win the Premier League or the Champions League next season, do you think his 20 years will be seriously, the memory of what he's done will be seriously
so
stained?
I should pretend as well. If he doesn't
win the Premier League or the Champions League.
If he doesn't, which you won't. I think he's already tarnished. Yeah. I think he was a very good manager, but I think him revolutionising English
you're
football.
Not having it. All right, okay. Let's move on.
Football fantasy podcast.
We're gonna have three Gunners next week on this podcast.
We all cry together.
Marvin, let's start with you. One, the Premier League. Was it right to take Kevin Friend off the Leicester City game? Tomorrow's game, isn't it? Leicester play tomorrow.
It was the Sunday's game.
Yeah. Were they correct to take him off that game?
Jude, I just don't get it, right? I think for me, a referee, if you don't mention the referee in a football game.
Just give some context to listeners that don't know what happened. He was given the game, Leicester versus West Ham. Yeah. He was taken off that game because the Tottenham fans were upset that because he lives in that region of the country, Leicester, they were unhappy that there was going to be some unprofessionalism going on. He'll be biased towards Leicester. The Premier League subsequently took him off the game and put him on another game. Sorry, go on.
No, I think, Jordan, I don't want to take too much of your time on this one. I just think when it comes to referees, a referee having a good game is when he makes good decisions and then we don't talk about him. We don't know who it is. It's just been officiated well and the result is what it is, right? For me, I thought the Premier League.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Were spineless to make moves because Spurs fans were having a chirp. And I generally think that the display, who was it? John Moss that did it in the end. I think his display, and I think he made some decisions that were contentious, but probably were the right ones. But I generally think there was a voice in the back of his head which affected how he officiated the game. So it was almost a domino effect, you know what I mean? A, they're listening and making decisions based on where people live. If that was the case, why didn't they just get a load of foreigners in so nobody has an impact? You know what I mean? I've never lived in Liverpool, but I flipping hate it. If I refed it, then I'd probably buy it. It's just too much. You know what I mean? And I watched the Leicester West Ham game, and I watched. I think there was a penalty shout with Huth for offensively and defensively. Morgan, there was a pen. Vardy got sent off. There was just so much, and in my mind, I was thinking, you know what I mean? I was thinking, how much of this has been, how much of the referee change has been a catalyst for us watching how this game has been officiated and how this game has been officiated? Because, I mean, Chris Smalling is my boy, right? He's a professional fouler in the league, right? It happens all the time. And I think if Kevin Friend was there, some of that stuff would have gone and it would have been allowed to play. I think there's this conception in the Prem, if a foul happens, if something happens in the penalty area, it's either a dive or a penalty. I think there's a middle ground. There was a coming together. Vardy went down. I don't think it was a yellow. I don't think it was a pen. Stuff happens. So I just think it was managed badly. And realistically, sometimes the Premier League has to say, that's the ref. That's how it's going to go. If then the game plays out and Friend looks seriously biased, I mean, I'll be the first. United's had some biased refs in their times as well, with people like Webb, for instance. But Clattenburg is an idiot. You know, like, refs are just refs. I just think it was a bad decision and it sets a dangerous precedent moving forward that if somebody lives in a certain area towards the business end of the season, whether it be relegation or for championship, that fan power can dominate how a game's going to be officiated. And I just don't think that's the right thing to do.
Akin, Arsene Wenger was really vocal on Friday about how he thought it was ridiculous that he was taken off that game, and he disagreed that with the decision to take him off the match. I personally actually think I would go as far that there's a rule that you have to declare the team that you support as a referee, and then you're not allowed to referee a game with that team playing. For me, that rule in itself is nonsense, because what they're doing, what they did, taking Friend off the game on the weekend, and with the rule about supporting, they're kind of implying you're not going to be a professional. If you're a Man United fan, but you're a professional referee, you should be able to referee that game and be unbiased.
They're
kind of implicitly saying, we don't completely think you're going to be professional. So referee that game down south because you're nowhere near it.
I disagree with what you're saying. I'd like to think I'd be unbiased, but I don't know. It's my job, so I'd like to be professional, but I don't know. We're humans. And I think the reason why that rule is in place is because they take into consideration the fact that we're humans. So just to minimise the kind of subconscious bias that might take place, they've put that rule in. It's in there for international football as well. For me, it makes perfect sense. My issue with what happened is that they publicised it. I think they could have just said, oh, he's ill, or just taken him off the week's games, or just been quiet about it, or made up a lie. Just
because the Tottenham fan made a big deal about it on Twitter.
They still could have just denied it. No, they could have just denied the reason. There's been a change, undisclosed reasons, that's it. It didn't, for me, they didn't need to publicise it so much. And I agree 100% going forward with what Marv said, in terms that on the actual day, I think subconsciously we were all affected by the change. I think John Moss's performance was inconsistent at best. I've seen Jamie Carragher's defence of him and I think it was nonsense. I think the referee was quite poor and, like I said, very inconsistent. And I feel he was trying to prove a point that he wasn't biased towards Leicester. And in doing so, he was a bit biased against them. for me, anyway, again, I agree 100% about the Jamie Vardy sending off. He did manufacture the foul, but it wasn't a dive. If you don't feel it was a penalty, it doesn't have to be a dive. It's just the coming together. So
give a goal kick.
That's it. I wouldn't have booked him for it. You know, I think the first booking wasn't a booking anyway, but that's neither here nor there. But I just feel that the whole kind of publicising it was the major error. Everybody was talking about it, including your manager, Arsene Wenger, who it had nothing to do with.
No, but he was asked a question because it wasn't about, okay, that game kicked it off, but the general point was this could happen to any team. How I think the question he was asked was, if it was your club, how would you feel? And that's, to be fair, that's why he responded.
True. In any case, everybody was talking about it, and I feel all of that contributed to it, and it just... For me, it's no big deal. I thought it happened anyway that they switched referees for reasons like this. Hmm. It's not that he lives in the region as well. He says Bristol City is his main club, but he also supports Leicester. So
I think he said he goes to Leicester games often. I don't think he supports them. Well, I think he said he regularly goes to the King Power.
So in any case, for me, it was a non-story that it had happened. I just didn't know why it was publicised, and I think that's where the mistake was.
Gabriel, Akin doesn't feel it was a non-story. You're going for the title, last game of the season. Your rivals are Manchester United. Yep. Their game, the referee of their match is a Man United fan.
That's how it always is.
Okay, Liverpool. Then say Liverpool going for the title. Yeah, good point. The referee of that game is a Scouser. Yep. Lives on the Wirral.
Yeah.
Do you make a big deal of the fact that their referee at their game is going to be unprofessional potentially because of where he lives and the team he supports?
Yeah, I do, but I don't do it necessarily thinking or having that mindset that there's a conspiracy.
You do it to lean on them.
I do it to lean on them. Yeah, to put pressure. It's mind games, isn't it? Yes. That's what it is. And I have to it's just typical Tottenham fans, always moaning about something, always the victims. Just get out of here, man. There's a fairy tale about to happen, and they're trying to ruin it.
But if the decision went Leicester's way, that was controversial, everyone would have said, and Friend did the game, everybody would have said, oh, that's Kevin Friend. He lives in Leicester. Of course he'll give that decision their way.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not harsh on the FA for doing what they did. I agree with Akin. It could have been a lot quieter. It could have been handled better. I think they've probably done the right thing as a body, because as a body, you do have to take into consideration conflict of interest and things like that, and just make sure that you're as impartial as you possibly can. It's just the one, that it was publicised, and two, that it was off the back of a moany fan going on Twitter, because every fan now is going to go on Twitter and try to look at, you know, I've got a picture of him, he was in Derby the other day, so therefore he shouldn't do the game. And I think that's the risk. It set a precedent which we might never be able to go back on. But I just think get on with it. If you're that good, it won't need to come down to the last game. You'll get your points in the bag, and you know that one game won't make a difference.
How can you guys though say that they should have done it but do it quietly? I mean, the whole reason why they did it is because it was public. If they did it quietly, it still would have been a big deal. I don't think once they reacted to public pressure, the reaction was also going to be public.
Yeah.
The only non-story would have been to tell everybody to calm down, this is how it's going to get done, we're the governing body. As soon as they bent to public pressure, everything's public.
But that's the thing, why did it have to get to the point?
Well, you think they should have discreetly handled it before there was any pressure?
Tottenham
even have a chance to complain.
If he goes to the King Power on a regular basis, but why was he ever in contention for that game in the first place?
Is he not allowed to go to King? If it's his local ground, is he not allowed to go watch games there?
There you go. You're filling the gaps. It's his local ground. Then you've got the question: is he going to be biased? Is he going to have a little bit of an affinity towards them? That's the problem.
Okay, so if he was from down south and his mum lived in Leicester? Yeah. So every Sunday he was photographed in Leicester.
No, in Leicester, fine. At the game, no, you can't do that. You know that's kind of bordering on there. You're in there with the fans. The fans are, you know, making jokes of you. And
what he's saying is he can't go to the King Power.
No, what I'm saying is if he wants to go and watch football, it should be equal. If he's a regular attender at the King Power, I don't think he should be refereeing Leicester games.
Okay.
And then going back to what Marvin said, Tottenham's thing was public. Just lie. The Premier League could have lied. It's that simple. Kevin Friend, you're not refereeing any games this week. You are ill. You've got a stomach bug. John Moss is taking this one. Someone else has taken the one that he took. Done. Simple.
I hear what you're saying, right? But if that happened, we'd be sitting on the pod saying, is everyone trying to put it all over our eyes?
We wouldn't have spoken about it. We wouldn't have spoken about it. Referees go down with injuries all the time. Or illness
Uriah
or whatever.
Uriah already had a few, but those were...
It was a shocker anyway. All right, guys. Nice one. Let's move on to our next one now. Our final one. I want to talk about Gabby Agbonlahor. He was photographed this morning in a national paper on the front page having a party. I think he was at home. Canister gas cans, whatever they're called, all around him. He's having a party with some balloons and all that nonsense. Those were taken apparently hours after Villa were relegated on Saturday. I think the guy's a disgrace, personally. There was an announcement on Friday, I think it was, where the Villa put out a statement saying he's been put on a 2-week training program, which for me was just basically posh talk for you're a fat, a word rhyming with puck, lose some weight, which I think in midway through April is disgraceful. You're being put on a program.
What is that word, Jude? Is it
we're not going to use that word on the pod, but you know what I mean. I think it's embarrassing. He's professional. He's living the dream, playing for his boyhood club. He's on 50 grand a week, and he's unfit. He's been unfit for a couple of years. He's been on poor form for 3 or 4 years. Gabriel, do you think that it's the end of the road for him at Aston Villa?
I don't think Villa should make too big a deal out of this. They should just deal with it discipline-wise. And they've had two board members resign over the weekend who I think were just appointed a couple months back. They got bigger fish to fry, really. Agbonlahor has probably run his course at Villa, but don't focus on that. Focus on rebuilding the club and trying to get back to the Premier League.
Akin, I think for most young men that love football, and I'm assuming most of us in here, the dream job would be to be a professional football player in the Premier League, if not one of them. He got that dream job. He's on a really good contract. He's taken a liberty. He's been poor for 4 or 5 years now, in my view. He's been unfit now for 2 years, in my view. Do you feel he's a disgrace, or do you have any sympathy for him whereby he's just got to a point where there's issues there and he's just had enough and they've got relegated, he's gone out for a party, he's entitled to let off some steam?
I think, yeah, it seems to me that he's done with football. If he can do that the night your team is relegated, they were relegated forever, but the night it was confirmed, you know, you clearly don't care. Mentally, he's not with it in terms of being a professional footballer. He's shown, for me, a level of unprofessionalism by allowing himself to get unfit. It's been poor from Villa's point of view that he's always been around and he's always been unfit, but he haven't done anything about it until the eve of relegation, which was, I found a bit strange. But in any case, I found it weird because he's meant to be on his 2-week training course. I thought he was sent away somewhere. And he's still doing his drugs and having his party. And yeah, he's clearly done. But like Gabriel said, I don't know when his contract is done, but he's probably not going to get renewed. He's never been very good anyway.
Well, Gabriel says underachieved. Do you think he was good
anyway? I don't think he was good. He was just a sprinter. He couldn't finish, didn't have a touch. He was rubbish. You know, so... No, it's true, though.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he would ever been a top-class player, but I think he could have...
Oh, don't take the piss. Don't take the piss.
Carry on, Akin.
Yeah, Agbonlahor, he was never very good. He was, you know, he benefited from having good players around him at some point. Carew, Ashley Young, when he was of a certain level, and others. I can't remember. They've had some good players about 10 years ago. But, yeah, he's done. And... I do have sympathy for him as a man because he's clearly showing some signs of some kind of depression.
I was just going to, my question to Marvin was going to be, I look at him and I think there's something right there.
He's not happy with...
It's the sort of thing you can see in 3, 4, 5 years from now, finding out that something wasn't quite right there. I don't want to make aspersions.
This is where I kind of take issue with the PFA and the kind of wider media and the public.
They're not helping him. He's clearly off the rails.
As a whole, everybody's so quick to jump on these guys, say they earn this amount of money, blah, blah, blah. It's like there's a kind of deep-seated jealousy that they are earning so much money so young and so on and so forth, that they can't ever be depressed or be, you know, not with it. You are allowed to have those downtimes. As humans, we do. It's just that they're in the public eye. To be in the public eye at such a young age cannot be easy. So for me, he's showing some signs of depression, but for me, that sympathy is only extended to white English players. And okay. when it's a player that's not white or and or English, the sympathy isn't extended as far. And I think, I'm hoping that somebody, somewhere, in terms of the PFA or within that club, can kind of reach to him and find out what's going on mentally. Because he's exhibiting behaviours that doesn't...
A bit worrying.
His mental health might not be where it should be.
Marv, Akin makes the point there that he is a human. We all have troubles and issues that kind of affect us at work. I think what would the Villa fans, what's irritating them is that he's a player that kind of prides himself on, I'm a local boy, I've been here all my career, I'm one of you guys, I'm a fan on the pitch, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, he's taking 50 grand a week and playing really, really poorly. So if you're going to be depressed, the Villa fans, I'm assuming, would say, well, that's fine, get some help, but give back your 50 grand a week because we're paying you to play and you're not performing, haven't, for a good 3 or 4 years. Do you have sympathy for him, or do you think that he needs to basically just cut his loss and just walk away?
I'm sitting here staggered. I'm in a totally different camp from where everyone else is, right? Why do we've just talked ourselves into saying we think something's wrong? What have we seen?
I'm not saying something's wrong. I'm saying that I've always looked at him and thought that he doesn't look like a guy that's happy. That could just be his face, but he doesn't look like a guy that's happy.
Man, I mean, at the end of the day, right, we're talking about a guy who was under scrutiny because he had a party. Footballers have parties all the time, right? And I think, and we've made this point a million times before, we are in a digital age where if anybody sitting here thinks that people haven't had parties after relegation, when relegation has been confirmed or let off some steam, it's probably happened for as long as the Premier League has been alive, right? The difference is he just handled it better. I mean, if I was a Premiership footballer, and you're right, I think it's everybody's childhood dream.
Premier League.
Cheers, Gabriel.
I would probably have a little drown my sorrows, but everyone leave their phones at the door, and then there's no conversation here. I think,
but that's my point.
The issue's not parties. He's playing poorly.
But for me, Marvin, that's part of why I think he's not right at the moment.
He's having a party because
he's not even taking precautions to not get caught.
Right, that's my point.
He doesn't care.
I get it. I get what you're saying. But for me, I agree with Akin. I think he scored over 15 goals once in his whole year.
Has he? I don't think he's done that.
I think he's done a total of 16 once. Okay, don't quote me on that, though.
Check that. All competitions.
Never Prem. Come on. Come on. Be realistic, guys. Come on. So, personally, I just... The whole Villa thing is it's just an absolute car crash, isn't it? You know, they're like 12 points off, right? And I think whoever got beaten by them needs to take a look at themselves.
Whoever only beat them 1-0 needs to take a look at themselves as well.
I think 3 points is 3 points. Thank you very
did
much.
They beat Chelsea?
No, our B team beat them 4-0. Yeah.
But
some goals.
But for me, I just think, again, this is a non-issue for me, right?
You think it's a non-issue that a guy that's being paid 50 grand a week to play football, this isn't a six-month bad period of form. This is 3-4 years the guy's been paid well to play professional football, and he's not delivered. And it's getting worse now. He's not only off form, he's unfit. At the bare minimum for a professional sportsman, be fit.
Jules, do you think he's the only player...
And then he's partying when they get relegated. How do the fans feel about that?
Do you think he's the only player in the Prem who's underachieved in the last couple of years?
I think he's the only player in the Premier League that's underachieved for the last 3-4 years and is unfit.
I think Wayne Rooney's underachieved for the last 3-4 years.
Wayne Rooney still scores the occasional goal. And he's not unfit.
He's always unfit.
I honestly think this is a scapegoat thing, right? Villa have been appalling. And any wrong move, whether it be Grealish or whether it be Lescott or whether it be Agbon Lahore, the media's getting into them, right? I think the bottom line is, yeah, you're right. He's unfit. But you know what? He's a shit player, right? And that contract is not Agbon Lahore's fault, right? And all this stuff about giving money back, George, I hope none of my colleagues I listen to this, but I've had a couple of bad weeks at work where productivity's been low.
How about you giving back, Marvin?
I am giving back a big fat zero, my dear friend. I'll tell you that for nothing.
I agree 100%.
Is the public paying you? It's not the public's money. Grand a week.
It's
they're contributing to that.
No, it's not the public's
they're
money.
They're contributing to
football
his wage.
Is a private. Is in the private sector. It's not public sector money. So all that kind of talk about should footballers earn this, they earn as much as they can get paid.
I'm not saying that he should turn down 50 grand a week, but I'm saying
he shouldn't give any of it back.
But I'm saying, I'm making the point.
The fans don't have to pay. I'm saying they don't have to buy Sky. They don't have to turn up to the games. Mm-hmm. They don't have to buy the kit with his name on it. They can sit down at home and not contribute.
They don't buy their ticket
and then
for
his contract,
for the
his
team.
Contract won't
he's
be.
A part of
but, then he does but he does claim that he's a Villa fan.
That's
well.
The thing. The fans are saying, you're making
okay,
one of us.
Don't give the money back.
No. Okay, I'm not saying don't give the money back. What I'm saying, though, is that he can't expect to not get any criticism.
Oh no!
Bearing
no,
in
yeah,
mind,
yeah.
He's getting paid a lot of money to do a job. He prides himself on being a local boy. I've been in I'm a Villa fan. And he's letting the club down.
No one's saying that you shouldn't be criticised, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't be criticised, but I just think this is a storm in a teacup for me, right? And I think at the end of the day, he's clearly not got the right people around him. Because if I was a footballer's mate with no talent, you know, I'd get all the fine girls, I'd get some mates in, but there'd be a no phone ban and things would be able to play out behind closed doors. And I think a number of Premier League players do that. But the bottom line is, George, this is, you know, he's never been a great player. He, as Akin said, he is just a runner. And when runners get towards the end of the season, get to the end of their careers, where even if they were fully fit, they're not going to hit the pace they used to be hitting, they fall off quickly. That's what it is. I'm just not sure. Like, you seem to be in this domain where, you know, because of the fact that he claims to be a Villa player and because he's getting paid all this money, that should mean he handles himself in a different way from somebody who hasn't got the affinity to the club or isn't paid as much. And I just think footballers are footballers. I think they all do it. I think there's probably a lot of illegal drugs consumed. I think there's a lot of drinking between games. I think there's a lot of cigarette smoking, but he's just been the idiot that hasn't handled his PR. If the sensible thing will be somebody... his agent or somebody will get round him. He will then, you know, lose the way. I don't know whether he's going to still be at Villa. He'll probably put some money into some obesity program and everything will be okay. But for me, I'm just not sure that he's the only person in the same category.
I don't think the issue is the PR. I think the issue is that his performances. I think if he was doing crack cocaine every single weekend but scoring a hat-trick, Villa fans wouldn't care. It's the fact that he's not performing whilst he's partying and unfit.
But the issue is the PR.
Where there's still some a clasp of a chance. But Jordan, I just think people drown their sorrows. He has done it badly, but they're relegated. Do you know what I mean? So I think if they were still fighting and contesting, and you know they've got a big do or die game on Saturday, and he's having this party, then I think it's a worse narrative. But it was after the game. I think if you're going to let your hair down, you do it as far away from the next game. You can't get any further away from that evening.
That's a good point.
For me, Edward Lahore is just a fat, crap player that's overpaid.
Let's leave it there then. All right. I want to do a quick pundit watch, guys, before we wrap up. I want to do on Stan Collymore this week. Yep, your favourite Marvin. For those who don't know, very brief bit of background. Johnny Lescott did an interview after the Villa game when they were confirmed relegated, defeat 1-0 at Old Trafford on Saturday. He said in his post-match interview that it was a relief and a weight off the players' shoulders now that it had happened, it being the confirmation of relegation. There was uproar on Twitter. Villa fans were like, you know, what do you mean? You can't say that, blah, 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 blah. I listened to Call Collymore on Talk Sport about an hour after that game. He was having it. He was calling out Villa players, in particular Jolyon Lescott. And he wasn't happy with what he said after the pitch. And I think those that know that Stan Collymore's a diehard Villa fan and very vocal about that. Gabriel, it got a bit nasty. There were messages exchanged which were online, which have been, I think, taken down now. Jolyon Lescott has tweeted or messaged Dan Collymore, basically calling him out. You've been digging me out all season. You don't rate me. I don't rate you. Let's meet up and have it out. he'll probably say that he meant to talk, but I think we all know that what he means by let's have it out. Colin Moore responded and said, we'll meet in good time, don't worry about that. In the meantime, stop talking nonsense.
Yeah, Colin Moore responded like a bitch and put it out public.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. He did.
Excuse my French.
Okay. So I'm just giving the listeners context of what happened. He messaged him back, blah, 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 blah. Do you feel that he's a diehard Villa fan, in bearing in mind what Lescott had said, Colin Moore, forget he's an ex-footballer, forget that he's a broadcaster, do you think that he was within his rights to be angry about the comments that were made?
I think it's one of those things, because I actually heard the comments, right? And I'm always one who looks for the context of the comments rather than the words themselves, because people are put on the spot. They say things that they don't necessarily mean when someone shoves a microphone in your face. I think the commentator asked himself on the lines of, well, you know, you're going down now, is that really bad? And I think what Jolyon meant to say was, well, maybe it's a bit of a weight off our shoulders now. Like, it was a monkey on our back, we all know it was coming, it's gone now. He said it totally wrong, and if you take the quote in isolation, it sounds really bad, because what he actually said was, now that we've gone down, we can give the fans what they deserve, which just sounds awful. But I'm sure that's not what he meant. And I think someone like Stan Collymore, who works in the media, who's been a footballer, who's had his own trials and tribulations played out in the media so many times, who knows how people can twist things, knows how things can get blown out of proportion, I just felt he should have come a bit better. I know he's got his fans on his little show that he needs to entertain. I know he deliberately likes to be controversial because that's kind of his angle. Mm. But I just don't see why he needed to put down Jolyon again. Not like he's not put him down for the whole season. So then Jolyon calling him out, I think that's fine. I think what Jolyon calling him out, you should, you know, keep that between yourselves. Mm. Or even if you want to talk about it, fine. Don't release the tweet and then say, oh, sorry, my phone was unlocked in my pocket. It was an accident that I released it. At least be a man and say
he was mocking, he did that tongue in cheek.
Yeah, he was taking
about
the mickey.
The car from before.
Okay. Yeah,
but Marvin mentioned earlier on that he felt that Lescott as a candidate for worst player of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
So does that not imply that then this isn't just a thing now, that maybe he has been awful all season and therefore underperforming?
I think everyone in the Villa squad has been awful.
Right, so therefore Colin Moore's saying you've clearly been shocking the whole season and now it's a case of you're relegated. Thank God for that. That doesn't sound good.
I know, Jordan, it doesn't sound good, but I said, if you watch the interview again and you see the way it plays out, like, I don't think I have a bit of sympathy for Lescott. I mean, what he said was stupid anyway, but who's to say, seven out of ten of us, if you put a microphone in front of our face after something like that, something silly might slip out. And I think people have latched onto the quote rather than latched onto what the sentiment or the context of what Jolyon was trying to say. And I think that whereas the mass public are usually stupid enough to jump on things like that, or just see the quote and not even go back and look at the interview or anything like that, I think Stan Collymore, working in the media and being an ex-footballer, should have known better than to deliberately take the quote out of context.
Do you think
even
he let his heart rule his head?
No, I don't think it was even his heart. I think he's thinking, well, this is my job.
Opportunity
noise. Yeah. I can get myself a bit more attention here, which he has, because we're talking about it.
Mm.
And he's done that at the expense of Lescott, which helps no one. It doesn't help. He doesn't help his club. Doesn't help Lescott. It's just a bad situation all round. But a situation that he wants to come out the big man of, where he's actually dragging his own club down.
He is. Akin, who wins that fight?
Lescott. No, yeah? I don't know. I agree wholeheartedly with what Gabriel said. I think the quotes were taken a bit out of context. Having said that, I think this combined with the whole tweeting of his new car, the mistaken tweet in the quote unquote of his new car, this doesn't make Lescott look good.
The thing at Oxford with the chewing gum, they were doing kick-ups with the chewing gum on the FA Cup game.
I didn't even know about
that. There you go.
But then it doesn't make him look good. But having said that, I think Stan Collymore is such a buffoon. I think he always behaves like a buffoon on his shows. How he's handled this one is just typical of him as a broadcaster. I don't know the man, so I'm not going to comment on the man. But as a broadcaster, he just seems like a cheap, attention-seeking type of guy that will latch onto anything. Again, Gable was spot on. He's an ex-pro. That that has had his own issues, that his performances for Aston Villa as a professional footballer were very similar to the levels that Lescott's were, if not worse.
He's been open about that, to be fair. He said that his time at Villa was a failure.
So Lescott might in 10, 15 years be open about how he was a failure at Villa as well. But Lescott's got Premier League titles in his back pocket too. So I don't want to get into that kind of stuff. But even as a broadcaster, I think Stan Collymore has been unprofessional on this one.
Do you think that his bluster and his brand of broadcasting, which is very bolshy, loud, in your face, give it to you,
yeah, I get
kind of overrides
angle.
The content of what he says? So do you think he talks sense, but the way he presents
I don't think he talks much sense. Because I listen beyond the noise. Yeah, okay. And he just says the kind of obvious things. He sometimes says things for effects that are just opposite to what everyone else thinks. And him and the other guy on the Monday fight night,
Suckers.
Yeah, they just shout over each other and they come with the same narrative of the old-fashioned English way is the best way. All these Johnny foreigners that have come in have no heart. They don't love the club, blah, blah, blah. They're so kind of archaic and he's just a buffoon. Again, the whole Lescott thing, they private messaging, they were texting each other. Lescott all season maybe didn't behave like a man. This time he did. He said, look, we don't like each other. Let's go and deal with it. Whether that means talking or more, let's do this as men. Stan Collymore like a female dog. He puts it out on the internet and then to embarrass him. Like, and you're meant to be an older man as well. He's just pathetic. I've no time for him. He's such an idiot. And I think he's handled this whole thing idiotically. Lescott was an idiot too for the whole... He said it in the wrong way, and his performances this season, and the car tweet, and the chewing gum thing I don't even know about. So, all of it combined, he hasn't covered himself in glory. But then, Stan Collymore, I don't think, for me anyway, he was trying to kind of highlight Lescott even more. And I don't know how the general public has seen this, maybe they've got on the bandwagon. But I just think it highlights how much of an idiot he is as a broadcaster.
He came out worse than you think Lescott did.
For me, he did, okay. But I don't know how the consensus. Yeah, I don't know what the consensus is.
Marvin, just a really embarrassing end to an embarrassing season. That's just been one long embarrassment from in the boardroom to the management to the players to Grealish. It's just the last straw in a joke season.
Yeah, I mean it's been a shambles, hasn't it, Jord? I think everybody knows it. The Villa fan know it. The Villa players know it. I mean, I remember when we discussed that pod that, you know, Richards went and spoke to the fans when they were going mental and all that jazz. But I can't, and I've actually put my hatred, which is deep, of Stan Collymore to one side in this one and looked at it in isolation, and I still hate Stan Collymore, right? Because for me, right, let me tell you, right, I've listened to the radio and Collymore on it, and I think you're right. Just like Gary Neville and Carragher, you know, they sometimes the passion overrules the quality, and there is content there, right? But when it comes down to the crunch, right? As a journalist, he's kept digging out Lescott, right? And you know, nobody can say, you know, when you support a club like Paul Scholes supports Man United, you do dig out, but Paul Scholes has digged out the emphasis of the club, right? He said, this is not the way it used to be. Whereas I think Collymore has been meticulous in picking players and calling them out and drawing attention to them over and over again. And I've listened to it where there's been times where it's not even about Lescott, but he's made it about Lescott. And for me, it was a personal message to him to say, look, you keep digging me out. Well, let's have a conversation. And for me, you go two ways, right? You say, listen, if you want a conversation, you come on my show. I'm a journalist. We'll have it out in front of the public. Or you say, all right, Rube, we'll talk about it, right?
Spot on.
For me, yeah. He went, you'll see me when you see me. You know, you might see, you know, all that crap.
No, to be
you'll,
fair,
you'll
he
see
did.
Me soon
I,
enough,
I heard
don't
the
you
show
worry.
I heard the show on Saturday, and he spent a good hour saying to any Villa player, in particular, he called out three, Lescott, Richards, and who's the one in the middle, the black guy, short guy, Akore, because they were the three that he thinks over the season have been the worst. So he did say, call the show, we'll talk about it on the show. He did, to be fair.
No, you can't call in that show. They are sneaky. No, they're sneaky.
And
they will just, they'll cut you out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When they need to cut you out, they'll cut you out. And especially that he knows they're not going to call the show the day they get relegated.
Okay.
He knows it's not going to happen. It's
George,
for effect.
It's for effect. Aside from that, I just think what he did, I thought, was just a bit sneaky. Either you talk to him like a man or you say, let's put it on the record. He did neither and put it on the record. Drew more attention. It is more publicity for Stan Collymore. Stan Collymore talks all of this talk about overpaid, blah, blah, blah. You were overpaid, Stan, and you checked yourself into the Priory because you suffered from depression. So don't give this big talk about, you know, when you're getting paid all this money, you got to be a professional, because when the chips were down for you, you had to seek help, right? And I just think he is an idiot, right? And he goes on like he's holier than thou and that he was the consummate professional. I remember there was a conversation on the show where they were talking about diving, and he went on about, anybody find any video
he's
of me?
He's very big on diving.
Yeah, anybody find a video of Stan Collymore diving and blah, blah, blah. No one cares about your videos. No one cares about what you think. If you don't think diving's an issue, that's fine. But it's always about Stan Collymore. I'll give you examples about me. I'll give you examples of that. You weren't anywhere near as good a footballer as A, you was, or you could have been. And that's because you mistreated yourself as well. Yeah. So don't give me this big talk. I can't stand it. And I think for me, the whole thing about the issue of journalism at the moment is they are giving a platform to not past footballers with sense, but past footballers with big mouths, right? And people are succumbing to it when it's not about them. So, you know, Man United or Liverpool people, well, not Man United people, but Liverpool people or other fans will love Collymore when he's slagging someone else off because he's just cussing people. There's not as much basis as there should be. And I think this Lescott thing, to me, showed him to be the coward that he is, right? Somebody said, look, you know, if you want to talk about this as men, let's do that. He had no problem when he was talking to Eureka, so let's have a, you know, let's have a conversation.
That's what I was thinking about.
You can find videos of that.
Exactly.
So I'm just not having it. And as poor as I've mentioned, Lescott was poor. The tweet about the car was idiotic, right? But on this particular topic, Collymore could have ignored him. He could have got him on the show, or he could have gone down the road that Lescott clearly wanted to go down. The option that he took was the worst of them all. And I can't believe people are saying, oh, too right to show him up, Stan. Shut up, Stan. Shut up.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Sorry, Stan. I think also as well, the fact that Lescott, I think, is a Villa fan as well, was maybe another reason why he picked on Lescott. Because I think, he's kind of expecting more from Lescott, who you highlighted earlier in the show has been poor all season.
Just if you're listening, feel free to come on the show. we can have it out with you as well.
Yeah. You're more than welcome.
Tweet him, George.
You'll see him soon enough.
He unfollowed me. I think you've heard one of our shows. And I think it was Ollie. I think it might have been Ollie. It might have been you, Mar, also one of the early pods, where you were slagging him off. And since then, he's unfollowed me. So
he's a coward.
He doesn't like us anymore.
Please tell me you're not upset.
I don't really give a damn either way. I find it interesting.
Fine. Anyway. Screw you, Stan. We don't give a shit about you, homie.
All right, that's nice one for that one on this week's FFP. Also, big up to Michael above things today at Kick It Out conference today. Get you on the pod at some point soon. Till next week, everybody. Peace.